Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chagiga Daf Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur 4 lines from the top. Before we begin the actual text, let us glance at the side where we have a nosei topic heading, where we've written the following. Ha demi sherak shemea oy rak medaber, that which someone who is capable only of hearing but not speech, or speech but not of hearing, potur me riya, is exempt from the mitzvah of riya. This is the topic that we had discussed during our previous year, the mitzvah of coming 3 times a year to the Beis HaMikdash and offering sacrifices. Nilmad mehakel, that is learned from the mitzvah of hakel. Very briefly, the mitzvah of hakel is every 7 years, the Sukkot time, after the Shemitah year, after the sabbatical year, the king of Israel enters the Beis HaMikdash and reads from the Torah in the presence of a very large assembly of Jewish people. And that assembly essentially includes all of the Jewish people, with a couple of exceptions. So we learn from Hakel. Hakel literally means to gather together, and as you can understand from the way we describe the mitzvah of Hakel, from this gathering we learn the halachas that are relevant to our topic of exemptions from the mitzvah of Aliyas HaRegel, or of Re'iyah. So now we continue the Gemara 4 lines from the top of Daf Gimel. Ma'ishno le'inyan re'iyah de'ptiri, u'ma'ishno le'inyan simcha de'mechayvi. What is different about re'iyah, where we say these people that are capable of only one of the two powers, speech or hearing, that we say regarding the mitzvah of re'iyah, they are exempt, but with regard to the mitzvah of simcha, as we mentioned at the end of our previous shiur, regarding that mitzvah, the mitzvah of celebrating, of eating meat on the holidays, on Sukkot, Pesach, and Shavuos, they are obligated. So the Gemara answers, Le'inyan re'iyah, as far as re'iyah is concerned, goma re'iyah, re'iyah mahakel. There is a gezeira shava, a word comparison that we make from the mitzvah of hakel. Later the Gemara will ask, well, by hakel itself, how do you know that these people that have only one of the two powers, speech or hearing, how do we know that they are exempt? So now, the Gemara continues. We say that the mitzvah of Re'iyah, the exemption from Re'iyah, is learned from Hakel Dichtiv. The Pasuk says, Hakel es ha'om ho'anoshim v'hanoshim v'hataf. That's the mitzvah of Hakel at the end of each Shemitah year, during the Sukkot of post-Shemitah year. Everyone is gathered together, men, women, and taf, children. Uksiv, bevoi kol Yisrael lirois. And it says there, in the context of Hakel, where all of the Jews come, lirois. And there you see the word lirois is the basis of the word comparison from Hakel, where you see lirois, and in our mitzvah of Re'iyah, yeroeh kol zuchurcha. This we cited in our previous shiur. We saw that word quoted in the Gemara. So you have Re'iyah, Re'iyah, the word lirois, which is a reflection of the word Re'iyah, and the word yeroeh. The Hossam Minolon, and thereby Hakel, how do we know that someone who is only a Shomea or only a Medaber, how do we know there he is exempt? Dichtiv, the Pasuk says in the context of Hakel, Leman Yishmu Uleman Yilmedu. Vitanya. And now based on that Pasuk, the Braisa elaborates, Leman Yishmu, in order for them to hear. That's prat lemedaber v'eino shamea. The pasuk insists on their ability to yishmeu. Well, that will exempt someone who is a speaker, who has power of speech, but does not hear. Uleman yilmedu prat l'shamea v'eino medaber. The expression, in order for them to yilmedu, in order for them, we think that means to learn, that will exclude someone who hears but cannot speak. Now, at this point in the Gemara, the thinking is that someone who does not have the power of speech is incapable of learning. That's what yilmedu means. And we're going to bring that into question now. As you can see, we've marked the following section with a long question. And on the side of the Gemara, we have a tatnose, a subtopic heading, where we've written, Maisa b'shnei ilmim, we'll see a story involving two mutes. Means these are people that lacked only the power of speech. They had the power of hearing. Shehitbarer, it became clear, shelomdu v'yodu harbe Torah, they learned and knew a lot of Torah. So to describe someone who is incapable of speech as being incapable of learning, we're going to challenge that now with the following story. The Gemara. Lameimra, are you suggesting dechilo mishtoi? Mishtoi means to speak. When someone is incapable of speech, lo gomar, they're incapable of learning, of absorbing knowledge. V'ho hano tre ilmi. There were two mute individuals. The word ilmi is the plural of the word ilim. There were two mute individuals. Dehavu b'shivuse de Rebbe. They were in the shivuse, in the neighborhood of Rebbe. B'nei barte de Rebbe Yochanan ben Gudgada. They were the sons of the daughter of Rabbi Yochanan, the Amrila b'nei Achte de Rabbi Yochanan. Another version is they were the sons of Rabbi Yochanan's sister. The Chol Emes Dava Ayil Rebbe Lebei Midrasha. Whenever Rebbe's Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi would enter the study hall, the Torah study center, the base medrash, Havu Ayli, these two fellows, these two ilmin would enter V'yasvi Kameh, and they would sit in front of Rebbe. They would be present while Rebbe was lecturing. Umenaydi bereshayu, umrachshin sifsosayu. They would nod their heads, and their lips would murmur, would move. Of course, that lip movement there was, but actual sound coming forth from them, that couldn't be. They were ilmim. Uvoi Rebbe rachmilai. Rebbe prayed for them, regarding them. They should get better. V'itzu, and they got better. They healed. They got better. V'ishtakach, and it then turned out to havu gemiri that they had learned hilchasa v'sifro v'sifri v'kulei hashas. They were familiar with hilchasa. Rashi says mishnayas and sifro v'sifri. This is midrashic literature on Sefer Vayikra, Sefer Bamidvar and Forum, v'kulei hashas, and all of the Talmud. So you see, they were very knowledgeable individuals. True, they lacked the power of speech, but to say that the posuk by Hakel that says leman yilmedu, in order for them to be able to learn, excludes someone who cannot speak, because someone who cannot speak cannot learn, that's not true. Omar Mar Zutra, kri be leman yilamedu. The word that we saw before, leman yilmedu, in the Torah, of course, words appear without vowels. So the same word yilmedu can be re-vocalized as reading yilamedu. Yilamedu means in order to teach over, so that the requirement for hakel to be participatory, to be obligated in the participation of hakel, would be someone who is capable of teaching over. Now, if someone is a mute, so he cannot teach over, he's not able to teach others. The Gemara continues with a point. It's lasts a number of lines. Rav Ashi points out that without the question that we raised from the issue of the mutes, from the phenomenon of those mutes, even without that, it's clear that the word yilmedu has to be read for our drosha purposes as yilamedu. It has to be understood thusly. Rav Ashi Omar, vadai leman yilamedu hu. It is definite that you have to understand that word specifying an individual that's capable of teaching over. We glance at Rashi, who says what we tried to explain already. Rashi in the upper part of the narrow lines, Rav Ashi Omar, Vadai Leman Yilamedu Klomar, Belav Kushya Dahanoch Tre Ilmi, with regardless of the question posed by the two mutes, Leko Leukmi Ledrosha Detano Demoy Mehocha Shoimea Vieno Medaber Elo Milaman Yilamedu. Continuing with the Gemara, the I Salka Daitoch Leman Yilmedu, if you were to think that the Pasuk should be understood simply as Hakel being an occasion in order to learn, V'kevon delo mishtoi lo gomar, V'kevon delo shoma lo gomar, and according to the Havamina, that which we would have thought earlier, that since he cannot speak, he cannot learn, and since he cannot hear, he cannot learn. Well, the issue of ability to learn, hai mileman yishme'u nafka, the ability, the necessity of having the ability to learn, to absorb knowledge, that was already learned from Leman Yishme'u, that was stated in the Pasuk. So, if all the Pasuk is interested in is having the ability to absorb knowledge, that's covered by the expression Leman Yishme'u. I don't need Leman Yilmedu simply to say the same thing. Elavadai Leman Yilamedu hu. Therefore, you have to say that the vocalization for our purposes is that Hakel is an occasion in order to have people participate that are capable of teaching over, passing on knowledge. And that requires not only the ability to hear, but also the ability to speak. So from this discussion, we learned that the mitzvah of Re'iyah presents an exemption to those that are capable of only hearing, not speaking, or speaking and not hearing, as is learned through a gzeirah shavah from the parsha of Hakel, where there we saw those kind of people exempted from, and that was based on the posuk of Leman Yishmeu and Leman Yilmedu, but being vocalized as Yilamedu. Before we continue further in the Gemara, we glance at the side where we have a Nosei Mivne heading. We have a topic heading with a structural note. It's featuring triangles. And you can see if you scan down the page, the text itself, you'll see Rabbi Tanchum's name appears in a triangle. These are Memros Shel Rabbi Tanchum. These are comments made by Rabbi Tanchum. Shnayim Orishonim Binyan Pturim Riyah. The first two comments have to do with exemptions from the mitzvah of Riyah. Cheresh Ba'ozno Achas and Chiger Beregel Achas. People that are incapable of hearing in one ear. In other words, one ear is deaf and lame in one foot. Beyond that, there will be more, another drosha of Rabbi Tanchum, and Rashi points out that the only reason that the subsequent drosha is here is because we mentioned two droshas that were relevant to our Gemara. The Gemara continues. Omar Rabbi Tanchum, Cheresh Ba'ozno Acha, someone who is deaf in one ear, Potter Minoria, he is exempt from the mitzvah of Re'iyah, coming to the Beis HaMikdash three times a year and offering sacrifices. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, Be'oznehem. And the word Oznehem, it means in their, with their ears in the plural, meaning capable of hearing in both ears. Now, it should be pointed out that this Pasuk appears in the context of Hakel, but once again, Hakel is the basis of the mitzvah of Re'iyah. The Gemara asks, "V'hai be'oznehem?" Is it not so, though, that the word be'oznehem, boyalei, is needed for be'oznehem de kulu Yisrael? That Hakel is to take place in the presence of all of the nation of Israel. So it's not available for teaching me about hearing capacity. The Gemara responds, Hahu, that point of needing all of the Jews to be gathered for Hakel, Mineged Kol Yisrael Nafka. That's learned from these words in the Pasuk, Mineged Kol Yisrael, or Neged Kol Yisrael. The Gemara asks, E, Mineged Kol Yisrael, had I just had that, Hava Mina, Afagav Delo Shami, all the Jews must assemble for Hakel, even if they cannot hear. Kosav Rachmona Bilznehem, Vahu Deshami. Therefore, it was necessary to write Bilznehem regarding Hakel, that the Jews that gather must be capable of hearing. But it doesn't serve as a source for Rabbi Tanchum indicating both ears must be capable. The Gemara says, Hahu, that point that they must be capable of hearing, mi leman yishmeru nafka. That's learned from another phrase, as we saw before, leman yishmu. Therefore, the word bi'oznehem is freed up, is available for Rabbi Tanchum's point, bi'oznehem, both ears, as the word bi'oznehem appears in the plural form. Omar Rabbi Tanchum, Chiger Baragloi Achas, Potter Min Riyah, someone who's lame in one foot, is exempt from Riyah. Shenemar, Rigolim, the word Rigolim, Shalosh Rigolim, its Rigolim appears in the plural. The Gemara asks, Vaha Rigolim, Miboya Le, Prat Lebale Kadin, but is it not so that Rigolim is used to exclude someone who has a prosthetic foot? Hahu, no. Bale Kavin, someone who has a prosthetic foot, whereby his foot had been amputated, and he wears a prosthetic device. This exemption is learned mi peomim shalosh peomim bashana. The pasuk says peomim desanya, and this is explained in the following Tanaic source. Peomim, that word ein peomim elo raglayim. The word peomim means, as a reference to feet. Now, on the very simple translation level, pomi means times, three times a year. But it also has a definition of feet. V'cheinu omer, and likewise you see in the following pasuk, tirmesena rogel ragle oni pa'ame dalim. And you see in this pasuk the word regel in the context of, or pa'ame, in the context of feet. The Oimer, another pasuk says, Ma yofu pa'mayich ba'ne'olim bas nodiv. And here you have the word pa'mayich in the context of shoes, having to do once again with feet. Rashi speaks about this pasuk. And actually, what we should do before we do that is continue in the Gemara. Dorash Rova, Mai Dichtiv, Ma Yofu Pamayach Banolim Bas Nodiv. Rova elaborates on this pasuk. What is the pasuk referring to? As follows: Kama Noim Ragleim Shel Yisrael. How beautiful, how attractive are the feet of the Jewish people? Bishal She'olim LeRegel, at the time that they ascend to the Beis Hamikdash on the holidays. Bas Nodiv, the term Bas Nodiv appeared in that pasuk, means Bitoy Shel Avram, the daughter of Abraham. The nation of Israel is considered the daughter of Abraham. Bitoy Shel Avram Avinu Shenikra Nodiv, the descendants of Abraham, the patriarch, are called by, referred to by the term Nodiv. He was referred to by the term Nodiv. Nodiv means someone who is philanthropic, someone who is generous, who is self-giving. Shenemar Nedive Amim Neesofu Am Elokei Avraham. Now the Gemara asks, why does the pasuk make reference to Avraham? Elokei Avraham is the Almighty, the Lord of Abraham. The Lo Elokei Yitzchok the Yaakov, is he not also the God of Yitzchok and Yaakov as well? So why does the pasuk feature or highlight Avraham? Elokei Avraham Shohaya Tchilo Lagirim. Avraham is specified in the context of Nodiv as he was the first convert. The word a convert is associated with the word Nodiv because this is a a person who is self-giving. He gives himself over to Judaism, abandoning idolatrous ways. There's a Tosfos makes a comment. That which we just said is taken from Rashi. Tosfos makes a comment. Chilu legerim shenitzdava al hamila tfei mikol oisim shelefonav. He was the individual primarily commanded on circumcision, and hence he's called the first of the gerim, in the sense that circumcision is an obligation upon he who converts to Judaism. So he was the first of those. And the Pasuk is referring to Nedivei Amim, those who convert to Judaism, gather together as part of the nation of the Lord of Abraham, namely Avraham Avinu being the first of the converts. Omar Rav Kahana, Dorash Rav Noson Bar Menyumi Mishum Rabbi Tanchum. The following drosha was said in the name of Rabbi Tanchum. Mai dichtiv vabor reik ein boi mayim. The posuk that appears in the context of Yosef Hatzadik and the brothers having put him into a pit, and the pit is described as a pit that was reik. It was empty and it had no water. Now mimashma shenema vabor reik, from the implication of the words of Abor Reik, the pit was empty, Eini Yodeya She'ein Bomayim, would I not on my own have been able to figure out that there was no water in there? Why does the Pasuk add Ein Bomayim? Ela, Mayim Ein Boy. Rather, what it's telling me is that water there was not. Avol Nechoshim Vakrovim Yesh Bo. However, there were serpents and scorpions that were present, that were there. So the brothers of Yosef had thrown him into a rather dangerous situation. Not only was it lacking water, but there was also these venomous creatures that were present. Before we continue in the Gemara, we have a topic heading where we're going to be introducing here a rather long Tanaic source. Bikur Shel Shnei Tanoim, a visitation of two Tanoim, Eitzel Rabbi Yeshua. You will see them visiting Rabbi Yeshua. Ushnei Droshes Shenem Rusham. We'll see two teachings, two topics that were developed there. Number one, Lomo Hataf Mishtatek B'mitzvos Hakel. Why is it that children, Taf are children, why is it that they participate in the mitzvah? We don't find the Torah making reference to the participation of children in any mitzvahs per se. Here, though, the Torah explicitly expects children to participate. Number two, Lamros Shiesh Machloikos V'ribui Deos B'sugyas HaTorah. The second point that will be developed in this source is that even though we find many points of controversy, arguments, and multiple opinions, and many topics of the Torah, kulam nemru mimokor echad. All of them draw their basis, their proofs, from one source. So now we turn to the Gemara. Tana Rabbana, Maise b'Rabbi Yochanan ben Broikov, Rabbi Lozar ben Chasma. An incident involving these two Tanoim, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Lozar, Shaholchu lahakvil penei Rabbi Yeshua b'Pekin, and they went to greet Rabbi Yeshua in the community of Pekin, the name of a place. Omar lahem, ma chidush hoya bebeis hamedrash hayom. Rabbi Yeshua asks his two visitors, what novel point was raised today in the base medrash? Omru lo. They responded as follows, and you see it's a very indirect response, and almost they're trying to avoid responding. Talmidecha onu, we are your students. And Rashi adds, v'ein lanu ledabir lefbifonecha, we're students, an extreme expression of humility here. We are your students, and we have no right to speak in your presence. And they continue, umeimecha onu shosim, and we drink from your waters. So that, as Rashi says, we don't have rishus, we don't have permission to speak up in your presence. And as we said, that was an expression of humility, but the Gemara will elaborate on that later on. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yeshua was unrelenting. Omar Lahem, Afal Pi Kain, E'efshir Lebeis HaMedrash Belo Chiddush. He says, even so, it can't be that there is a base medrash and that there isn't some novel point that comes up. Shabbos Shel Mihoysa, Rabbi Yeshua asks, there had been a rotation amongst the heads of the base medrash at that time, as is featured in Maseches Brachos. And there was a rotation as who would be present there on the Shabbos. So he asks, whose Shabbos was it? They answer, Shabbos Reb Elozer ben Azariah Hoysa. It was the Shabbos that Reb Elozer ben Azariah was present. Uvameh Hoysa Hagodo Hayom. And what was the learning? What did it involve today? Omru Lo Beparshas Hakel. And they answered, it involved the mitzvah of Hakel. Uma Dorash Ba, so Rabbi Yeshua asked, so what did Rabbi Elozer ben Azariah say about that? Answer, Hakel Asom Anoshim Vanoshim Vatach. They quoted the Pasuk, Im Anoshim Boim Lumo, and so they're telling Rabbi Yeshua what Rabbi Elozer had raised as far as a question on this Pasuk. He says, Im Anoshim Boim Lumo, Noshim Bois Lishma, granted, men come to study. The women, they come to hear. Taf lama boyin, but young children. Taf is an expression for regarding young children. What do they come for? And so Rabbi Elozer ben Azariah answers his own question. Kedei litein schar lemevi'eihen, in order for those that bring the children, that they should get schar, they should get reward. In other words, for the effort involved in bringing the children, the bringers of the children, the adults, receive reward. Tosfos points out something interesting at the very end of the Tosfos commentary. Kedei litein schar lemevi'eihen, v'alzeh somchu lehavi ktanim bebeis haknesses, and it's based on this that many see as a source for bringing young children to the synagogue. I should point out parenthetically that as wonderful an idea it is to bring young children to the synagogue, they must be of an age where they know how to maintain silence and decorum in the Beis HaKnesses. If you have an infant that's screaming and wailing away during the service and interrupting those that are davening, so on that we say Yotza Schora Befseda, whatever benefit there was to gain by bringing the child, there's greater loss in the disturbance that the child creates. We continue. Omar Lohem, so Rabbi Yeshua, upon hearing this, he says to them, Marglis Toiva Hoysob Yetrim, you have this wonderful pearl of wisdom in your hands, will be Gashtim La'abdo Mimeni, and you had initially intended to cause me to lose it. In other words, by your original intention of remaining silent, I would never have heard this wonderful idea. The Oid Dorash, and further he explained, Es Hashem Hemarto Hayom Vashem Hemircho Hayom. Now that's a pasuk in the Torah, and it was explained as follows: Omar Lahem Hakadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael, Atem Asituni Chativo Achas Ba'olam. The word Hemarto that we read in the pasuk, Rashi explains, Shibachta means you praised. So, the pasuk is then saying that as Hashem hemarto hayom, you, the Jewish people, thusly the Almighty says to the Jewish people, you, my people, proclaimed me asituni. You proclaimed me chativo achas ba'olam. Now we look at Rashi, chativo achas, shevach echad, shevach miyuchad. You proclaimed regarding me very special praise, saying, "Ein kamocha." Rashi says, "Ein kamocha." There is no one like you, like the Almighty. Lekach becharnucha leloka, and since there is no one like you, therefore we have chosen you to be our God. So the Almighty acknowledges this. He acknowledges their praise, and he says, "You made me chativo achas ba'olam." The word chativo, as we saw in Rashi, is a reference to "you proclaimed regarding me a very special praise." There are other approaches to explaining that word, to translating that word. You proclaimed me as a single entity. Might also be a translation. Dichtiv, and where do we see the Jewish people proclaiming the Almighty as singularity or as special? The word echod that we see cited in the Kriya Shema has these different connotations. Dichtiv, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echod. Where the Jewish people are proclaiming that the Almighty is echod, is either, you could say, is either, you use the word unique, or is singular, unparalleled, there is no one else. Einod milvado, there is no one other than the Almighty. So the recognition of the Jews of this uniqueness of the Almighty aroused the Almighty to say as follows: Vani es eschem chativo achas ba'olam, and I too am proclaiming you as a special, unique entity in this world. Shenemar, and here you see the uniqueness of the Jewish people featured. The pasuk we continue at the top of Amud Beis: Umi ka'amcho Yisrael goy echad ba'aretz. Who is like the nation of Israel, a singular, unique nation? V'af hu posach v'dorash. According to Rashi, this is a reference to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. There are other commentaries that make this as a reference to Rabbi Yoshua, who had been listening to this. This, you can see this point is made by the commentator of the Ranchburg at the very bottom of the Omen. He quotes the Marsha that this is a reference to Rebbe Yoshua, because up till this point he had been the listener. So v'af hu pasach v'dar, so to he, if you use the Marsha's pshat, it's again reference to Rebbe Yeshua himself, opened and elaborated as follows: v'dorash, and said, Divrei chachomim kedarvoinois uchemasmeros netuim bale asufos nosnu meroya echad. Correction in the reading: nitnu meroya echad. The pasuk describes that the words of the sages are like goads and nails, and they have all been given from one shepherd. Lomo nimshalu divrei Torah ledarvan. Why is why are the words of Torah compared to a goad? A goad or an ox goad is it's a long stick at the end of which a nail is attached, where the point of the nail is exposed, and it's used for motivating animals while plowing to continue plowing row after row in fields. So the darvan is the word used for that. Interestingly, in contemporary Hebrew, we use the word lidarbein, is to motivate, to provide an incentive. So why is Torah compared to a darvan? Lomar loch, it teaches us. Ma darvan zeh mechavin es hapora litzlomeo lehoitzi chayim loilam. Just like the darvan, mechavin is to direct the pora, the cow, the ox that's used in plowing. Tlomeo are furrows in a field, and through plowing the field, it eventually produces vegetation, and vegetation is the source of life. So through the plowing, where we produce life for the world, af divrei Torah mechavnin es lomdehem, so too the words of Torah help direct those that study the Torah, midarkei misa ledarkei chayim, from the paths of death, in other words, without Torah, leaving a human being to exist in his basic, we'll call bestial fashion. Eventually, it's an existence of that leads to death. And when we speak about death, we're not referring only to the pure preservation of mankind in this corporeal, physical world, but of course we're dealing also with the issue of eternity. So with regard to a life of eternity, certainly without Torah, one cannot achieve that. So the words of Torah also help direct those that study it from the path of ultimate death to the path of Darkei Chaim, the path of eternal life. Well, if you continue with this analogy, though, we ask the following question: Ima dar ben zeh metaltel, af divrei Torah metaltelin. If we're going to compare Torah to a darben, the darben itself is something that is movable. You can change its location from one place to another. It's not something of a permanent nature. Are you going to say that the words of Torah also are not fixed and established? The Marsha, in explaining the word metaltel, explains it as something that is not permanent. So if the analogy is being made between Torah and the Darben, are we going to say just like the Darben is something that is not permanent, so too the words of Torah are not permanent? Talmud Lomar Masmeros. Hence the Pasuk also uses an analogy to Masmeros. Masmeros are nails. A nail is that which is designed to attach something in a permanent fashion. Hence the Torah is also compared to that, to nails, as they represent permanence. Ima Masmer Zeh Choser Velo Yeser. If you're going to then focus on that analogy, when you bang a nail into a piece of wood or other substances, so it detracts from the substance, whereas the item was solid beforehand. Now you bang the nail in, so whatever spot that the nail occupies, the original material is diminished. So just like a nail causes a diminishing and not increase, are you going to say af divrei Torah chaserim v'lo yaserim? So too the words of Torah represent diminishing and not increase. Talmud Lomar, therefore the pasuk uses the word netuim. Ma netiyah zu, netuim means something that's planted. You plant a seed in the ground, the original ground material remains. It doesn't diminish its surroundings. Ma netiyah zu pora v'rava, just like the plant increases and multiplies af divrei Torah porin v'ravin, so too the words of Torah are expounded upon and increased. Very simply, you can see a posuk in the Torah might have just a couple of words to it, sometimes even one letter, but when you start analyzing it and you learn the oral tradition along with the psukim in the Torah, you see that there is a vast amount of information that is derived from even a couple of words in the Torah. So the posuk goes on, and the drosha of this posuk goes on, Baalei Asufos. The posuk in Koheles mentioned that there are Baalei Asufos. What is that a reference to? Elu Talmidei Chachomim. This is a reference to Torah scholars. Sheyoshvin Asufos Asufos V'Oiskin B'Torah. The different groups of Torah scholars that sit together, and they sit in groups studying the words of Torah. Halolu Metamin V'Halolu Metarin. If within the within a assembly of people, we have those that declare something to be defiled, others saying that that very same item is non-defiled, is tohor. Halolu osim, halolu matirin, those that will proclaim something forbidden, others proclaiming it, that very same thing allowed. Halolu poslin, halolu machshirin, those that render something unfit, and others in that same assembly will say that it is fit, it is kosher. So in the last couple of lines, we've illustrated that which is quite characteristic of Torah study, a great deal of controversy while studying. Shema Yoimar Adam, a person after seeing this or understanding this phenomenon might conclude, Heichani Lomed Torah Me'ata, how in the world can I study Torah, where there appears to be confusion or dissent? How can I study such a thing? Talmud Lomar, therefore the Pasuk says, Nitnu meroa echad. One has to understand that when he is studying Torah and though he sees multiple opinions on a topic, all of them derive their positions from one source, one shepherd. Kulam keil echad nasnan. All of their opinions, all of the words of Torah were given by one Almighty, one God. Parnas echad, Amran, one leader communicated in reference to Moshe Rabbeinu. He communicated it to us. Mipi adon kol hamaisin baruchu, and he communicated it to us from the from that which he heard from the Master of all creation, the Almighty. Dichtiv ayadaber lekim es kol advar ma'ele, as the pasuk indicates that the Almighty spoke all of these words to Moshe Rabbeinu. Af ato asei oz necho kafarcheses. So too, make your ears like a funnel. Ukne lecho lev mevin lishmoa, and acquire for yourself, develop for yourself a heart of understanding, capable of absorbing, as divrei metamin ves divrei metarin, the words of those that proclaim something to be tome, the words of those that proclaim the same thing to be undefiled, tohor, as divrei oisrin ves divrei matirin, the words of those that prohibit and the words of those that allow, as divrei poislin ves divrei machshirin. Beloshon hazeh omar lohem, in this way, In this fashion, he said to them, "Ein dor yosom shereb Elozer ben Azaria shorui besocho." There isn't a generation, the generation in which the great Reb Elozer ben Azaria lives amongst them, is not an orphaned generation. So this is the end of that particular brisa, which featured a meeting between Rabbi Yochanan and Reb Elozer, meeting up with Rabbi Yoshua in Pekin. Now, the Gemara asks, "Valemru lei behedyok." Notice we have a little arrow to the right-hand side of the text. You can align this, and it indicates to look at Omid, back at Omid Aleph, when Rabbi Yeshua to ask them what chiddush was there in the Beis Medrash. Initially, they didn't want to answer. So the Gemara asks, "Valemru lei behedya." Why did they not say straight out immediately? Why did they have to say that we are your students and initially attempt to avoid answering? So the Gemara says, "Mishul maisa shahoya." In the following incident, you will see why they hesitated. On the side, we have a topic heading where we've written maisa, a story shemuva that is brought here lahasbir. It's nahagusam niel shereb Yochanan reb Elozer chasma shelo onu miyad levakoshes reb Yeshua. This incident will help us understand what deterred reb Yochanan reb Elozer chasma from answering reb Yeshua immediately, responding to his request. Bakoshes reb Yeshua sheros ladas eiz chiddush nemar beis medrash, when he wanted to know what chiddush was stated in the Beis Medrash. So here we have a story that will help us understand things a little bit better. Desanya, Maisa, Rabbi Yossi ben Dormaskis. There was a story and an incident involving Rabbi Yossi Shalach Lahakdil Penei Rabbi Elozer Balud. You have the same scenario here of someone coming to greet a scholar, to greet, in this case, Rabbi Elozer Balud, means in the city, in the town of Lut. Omar Lo, Rabbi Elozer asked his visitor, Ma chidush hoy beis hamedrash hayom? What novel point was raised today in the study hall of Torah? Omar Leis, Rabbi Yossi answered, Nimnu v'gomru, they voted and they concluded the following halacha. This halacha has to do with the Shemitah year, the sabbatical year, where in general, that area that has the sanctity of the land of Israel, no agricultural activity takes place during that year. So they voted as follows and concluded, Amon and Moav, these are land regions east of the Jordan River. Ma'asrin Maiser Oni B'Shvias. Now, these are land regions. Amon and Moav are technically names of nations. But for our purposes, it's a land region that at the time of the conquest of Israel during Yehoshua, after the exodus from Egypt, these were regions that were part of the land of Israel. However, after the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash and the dispersal of the Jewish people, so the land of Israel lost its original sanctity, and only upon the return during the time of Ezra, 70 years later, after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, only then was there a restoration to a certain degree of land sanctity. Now, land sanctity has ramifications regarding tithes, regarding the need for desisting from agricultural activities during the sabbatical year. So they voted as follows, as Rabbi Yossi reports, that Amonu Moav Maaser Meiser Oni B'Shvius, that in these areas agricultural activity will continue during the Shemitah year, indicating that they did not regain their original sanctity, and as a result other laws will pertain. And the vote was that tithing will take place in those areas on the Shemitah year, specifically the tithe given to the poor, the which is known as Maaser Oni, a tenth of one's produce given to the poor. Now, in standard agricultural law and laws of tithing, the 6 years in which agricultural activity takes place, during those 6 years, amongst the different tithes that are set aside, the third and sixth year, two of those 6 years, are designated as Maaser Oni years. Now here, we're stepping out of the standard basic laws of agriculture and describing this new area of law, the that which pertains to Ammon and Moab, and as a result of their vote, says, or reports Rabbi Yossi, as a result of their vote, it was declared that the Ammon and Moab regions will practice the Maaser Oni, the poor tithe, the tithe given to the poor, on the Shemitah year as well. Omar Lo, so Rebbe Lozer, who hears this, says, Yoisi, Pshot Yodecha V'Kabel Einecha, stretch out your arms and receive your eyes. So if you were just to leave this at a literal on a literal basis, is you have to imagine his hands are now stretched out, and his eyes are going to pop out of his head and land in his hands. Well, obviously that's not what is taking place. However, if we take a look at Rashi, Pshot Yodech V'Kabli Necho Huk Shebe'enov, it bothered Rebbe Lazar Shenosan Atorah Lo'isoy Doresh, that Rabbi Yossi was giving so much credit and esteem to whoever had been lecturing in the study hall. Falo mimois anshei knesses hagdoilo hoiso takona zu. This takona, this law regarding Maaser Oni and Ammon and Moav on the Shemitah year is a much older ruling that predates your particular report. In other words, according the way Rebbe Lozer understood Rabbi Yossi, is that Rabbi Yossi is saying that thanks to the vote and conclusion that they reached in the Beis Medrash right then and there, Ammon u'Moav will mafrish Maaser Oni on the Shemitah year. Rebbe Lozer says that's absolutely not the case. So the story goes on. After Rebbe Lozer says to Rabbi Yossi, stretch out your hands and receive your eyes, poshat yodo v'kibel onov. He, in fact, stretched his hands out and he received his eyes. You might say Rebbe Lozer blinded him. Bocha Rebbe Lozer v'yomar. And Rebbe Lozer, he cries and says, Soit Hashem li'reov u'brisoi lehoidiyom. Omar lo, lech emor lohem. Rebbe Lozer continues and says, go tell them, al tachushu l'minyanchem. Don't ascribe too much importance to your particular vote. Rashi says, "Al tochusu minyanchem, al yihi lochem shum chashash begimgum b'ma she minisem v'tikantem shrei hiskantem lahalocha." He's saying, don't have any second thoughts about your vote. In other words, someone might say that an issue that had to be put to vote, so there's room to have doubt about it, but the vote settles the matter. Rebbe Lozer is saying here, there's no room for any doubt about it. It's solid information. Your vote and your conclusion is essentially it essentially aligns with that which had been determined much earlier. Kach mekublani, may Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, says Rebbe Lozer, thusly I have a tradition from my Rebbe, my teacher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Shishama me Rabbo v'Rabbo m'Rabbo, who in turn heard from his teacher, and his teacher from his teacher, going way back, Hilchasa l'Moshe m'Sinai. The comment on the side says that this doesn't mean literally a law from Mount Sinai to Moses, but rather it means it's a very old law, as we said, we saw before, that it dates back to the Anshei Knesset Gedolah, the men of the great assembly, which existed at the time of Ezra. This is a body of scholars that were present in the time of this rebuilding of the second Beis HaMikdash. It took hundreds and hundreds of years before this particular story took place. And what's the important law? Amon u'moav ma'asrin ma'isir oni b'shvias. That when the Shemitah year comes around, the land regions of Amon and Moav will continue their agricultural activity and tithe the ma'isir oni tithe. Matam, what is the explanation of this? After all, Shemitah year is a year in which no agricultural activity should take place in the land of Israel. So what's the basis of this, we'll say, exception or leniency? Harbe krochim kofshu ole Mitzrayim velo kofshum ole bov. There were many cities that were captured by the people who left Mitzrayim, those that were in the time of Yoshua that entered the land of Israel, that were not subsequently recaptured by those that emigrated from Bavel back to Eretz Yisrael in the time of Ezra and Nehemiah. So you have many, you have regions that the area captured or taken back by Ezra was a more limited area than that which had been captured by Joshua. The original sanctity that was imparted to the land when Yeshua entered, that original sanctity is called Kedusha Rishon, the initial sanctity that was sanctified for its time but was not of a permanent nature. So being that it's not of a permanent nature, it lasted until the exile of the Jewish people during the time of the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. V'hinichum, and they were left, many of these cities that were just referred to, those cities that had been captured by Mitzrayim, by the Olei Mitzrayim, and not captured by the Olei Bavel, when the Olei Bavel came back, those v'hinichum, they left them. They did not re-sanctify them. K'dei sh'yismuchu aleim aniyim b'shvias, so that the poor who would have upon which to rely. Now, people that were not poor had their own fields, and they produced food and stored it. What about the poor? What would be their source of food during the Shemitah year? So they would be able to receive from the Amon and Moav regions their Miser Oni tithe. Tono. The Achar Shinis Yashva Daito, we're taught that after Rebbe Lozer calmed down, remember he had been very upset by the report given to him by Rebbe Yossi that it was the Beis Medrash of their time that made this, that concluded this point, when in fact that wasn't the case. So after Rebbe Lozer calmed down, Omar Yirotzon Shiatsu Eine Yu Yossi LeMekoimon V'Chazru, shall be the will of the Almighty that the eyes of Yossi shall go back into their spot, and they in fact went back into their spot. And he regained his sight. Now, what the reason for this whole story, as we said before, was that you could see there's a certain level of danger, if you will, when you answer a great man's question too directly, too rapidly, as you saw what happened here with Rabbi Yossi ben Dormascus, and that affected the thinking of Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elozer Chasma when they visited Rabbi Yoshua. Before we continue in the Gemara, we glance at the side where we have a topic heading. Eze Shoita. We made reference to the Shoita as being an imbecile, as someone as exempt from the mitzvah of Riyah. What classifies someone as an imbecile? We'll see Machlokes Rav Huna Rav Yochanan b'Hagdoras Shoita. A controversy between these two Amoroyim, Rav Huna and Rav Yochanan, in establishing the parameters of a Shoita. Tonu Rabbanan. Eizehu Shoita. Rashi comments, Eizehu Shoita ha'omur b'chol mokoim she'potem min ha'mitzvah su'min ha'oynish ve'in kinyonu kinyin ve'in memkoro memkar. Who is that that is classified as a Shoita, where we find the term used in many places? He's exempt from mitzvahs, he's exempt from punishment, contracts that he makes are not contracts, and sales that he concludes are not sales. So we continue in the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan, Ezu Shoita. What is a Shoita? Hayotze Yechidi Balayla. One who goes outdoors by himself at night. V'halon Bevesa. Of course, one who sleeps in a cemetery. V'hamekareya Es Ksuso. And one who rips his clothing. So we saw three illustrations of a Shoita in this Tanaic source. Itmar, Rav Huna Omar, Achyu Kulon Bevasachas. Rav Huna says that one is not classified as a Shoita unless he does all of these things. In other words, in the same period of time, he's doing all of these things. Rav Yochanan Omar, Afilu Ba'achas Mehen. According to Rav Yochanan, a person would be declared a Shoita even if he practices one of these things. Heichi Domi. Further investigation. What are the circumstances? Either Ovid Lehu Derech Shtus, if he does something in an inane fashion, in a foolish way, Afilu B'chadunami, then even by doing one of these things, we would conclude that he's a Shoita, and therefore, why would Rav Huna say that he needs to do all three? Either Lo Ovid Lehu Derech Shtus, if he's not doing it in an inane fashion, in a foolish way, then afilu kulu nami lo. Then even all of these things, if a person is seen going out at night because he's going he has a specific mission to fulfill, he has to look for something, he has to meet somebody, and it just happens to be that he walks out at night, so that's not derech shtus. Or a person that, let us say, his house just fell down, he has no place to sleep, and he goes to a cemetery, and that's the only place that's an enclosed area, gated off area, so it's a place that's appropriate for sleeping. And someone who tears his clothing, he might tear his clothing because he needs to tear it for some reason. He needs to quickly expose his flesh. So he's not doing that in an inane way. So even if if this person has all of these needs, and he does all of these, so he's not a shoite. The Gemara says, the oilam de ka'ovid luhu derech shtus. We're talking about someone that is doing these things in a seeming inane fashion. And then you'll ask, so then why would Rav Huna say that you need to have all three? V'halon b'veis hakvoros, the fellow sleeping in the cemetery, Amor k'dei shetashre olav ruach tumahu dekovid. He is doing so with an intention, with a specific intention of having the spirits of defilement set upon him. This is, of course, a rather esoteric area for many of us, but it has to do with those who want to practice black magic. So he has a specific intent in his sleeping in the Beis HaKvaros. It's this intent, though. It's not, as we describe, someone has no place to sleep because his house just caved in. But he's going there for this particular purpose. And since he's going there for this particular purpose, the fact that he would have done only one, that wouldn't be enough for us to classify him as a fool, as a shoyte. Valon beveis hakvaros. Let's continue. The hayoyse yichidi balayla. Amor, I could explain why is he wandering out alone at night. I would say gandrifas achde. The word achde is like in Hebrew achzo. The Dalit and the Zion can interchange, means it took hold of him. What's gandrifas? So Rashi offers two explanations. One is that he's become suddenly overcome with fear. Another explanation is that the person became very hot and he needed some air. So that if you see someone going out at night, even though it doesn't seem any apparent good reason for him going out, nevertheless, if that's all we see as far as his behavior is concerned, I can say that he's not a shoyte because maybe he's going out for because of gandrifas purposes. He needed the air. V'amikareas kususo, someone who rips his clothing, and if that were all that we saw, Amor, I could explain that away also. Bal machshovasu, that he's a fellow that's very deep in thought, and he's not fully aware of what he's doing, and maybe out of excitement he ends up tearing his clothing because of some matter that is on his mind. So each one of these things, of these behaviors, we could explain away, even though, when we see him, as the Gemara says, he's doing it derech shtus, meaning it seems inane. We don't know of any good reason, we don't know of any obvious reason for him doing any one of these things, but each one of these things we could explain, it away. However, Kevon Davdinu Lekulhu, since he's doing all of these things, Hava Lehu, we could parallel this, and we continue at the top of Daf Dalet Amud Aleph. This is we're drawing an analogy from the laws of Nezikin, from that which you see featured in Maseches Bava Kama, of an animal that starts to behave dangerously. It starts goring. And if you have an animal that gores others, generally speaking, in order to establish an animal as a goring animal, a one-time goring wouldn't do that. And there's a practical halachic nafgamina, and that has to do with how much is paid by way of damages. Is half payment made, which is called chatzi nezik? That's characteristic of docile animals. Or is full damage paid, which is characteristic of an animal that's established itself a reputation of being a goring animal. And that reputation or identity is established after it does a goring three times. So in simple terms, if an ox gores another cow three times, or it gores three cows, then that's obviously established as being a shor hamuad, a goring animal, with the ramifications, as mentioned before, full payment must now be made upon any subsequent damage. What happens if an animal gores three times, but each time a different animal? So the Gemara says here, one who behaves, as we saw earlier, sleeping in a cemetery, wandering out at night alone, tearing clothing, three different activities, but he does all three of them. It's kemi shenogach shor chamor v'gomol. It's as if an animal gored an ox, a donkey, and a camel. Each one of them only once, but he gored three of that, the three different animals. V'nase muad lakol. He's established as being a goring animal with regard to all animals. So that, using that analogy back to our case of the shaita, if he does these three things all in the same time period, but he does all three of them, that would cause us to label him as a shoita. Once again, he's doing these things without our seeing an obvious good reason for him to do these things. So any one of these behaviors we could explain away, but doing all three, that leaves us no room other than to conclude that he is a shoita. So up to this point, we've been focusing primarily on the opinion of Rav Huna, who said that a shoita is one who does all three things. Omar Rav Papa, Yishmielei the Rav Huna ha desanya, had Rav Papa heard the following Tanaic source. And before we read the source, just skip to right after the source, right after the frame section. Have a hodarbe. He, Rav Papa says, he, Rav Huna, would have retracted what he said. So now, what does it say in this Tanaic source? The source reads, Eizehu shaita, who is an imbecile? Zeham abed kol mashen oisim lo. He who destroys anything that he is given. Whatever article is given to him, he simply destroys it. So had Rav Huna heard that, and in this source you see that a person is established as a shaita through one type of imbecilic action. Things that he's given, he destroys. So you don't need him to do three different things in order to be established as a shaita. So had Rav Huna heard this Tanaic source, Hava Hodar Bey, he would have retracted from his original opinion. Ibayalo, here Vigmore analyzes in a more specific fashion this idea of Rav Huna retracting. He Hava Hodar Bey, when we say that he would have retracted, Mi Mikarea Ksuso, who to Hava Hodar Bey, the Dam Yaloha, would he have retracted from his original position regarding the tearing of clothing? Originally he said that if a person would only tear his clothing, he wouldn't be considered an imbecile. Seeing this source, maybe regarding that point he would have retracted and said that if all he does is he tears his clothing, that's enough to make him into an imbecile, because the tearing of clothing is very similar to the example in this source of one who destroys, he's destructive, one who destroys that which he is given. So are we to say that Rav Papa's claim of Rav Huna having retracted, he would have retracted only with regard to the issue of Makari Ksusa, that alone could in fact have established him as an imbecile, but the other behaviors done alone would not have established him as a shoite. Oy Dilma Mikulu have a hadar, or Rav Papa is claiming that Rav Huna would have retracted from all of the examples that were given, namely that with regard to any one of those examples, doing any one singularly would have been the basis of our classifying him as a shoita, and not just merely tearing his clothing. So teku, this remains unresolved, namely, as far as what would Rav Huna, what point would he have retracted from saying that one foolish behavior is enough to classify him as a shaita, that to what extent or from what did he retract, that remains unresolved. Before, we should point out, though, if we say mikul hafahodar, he would have retracted from all of them, it would have been setting up Rav Huna very similar to the position taken by Rabbi Yochanan that we saw at the bottom of Gimel Amud Beis. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.